Happy holidays, everyone. It is the first Shark and the Dog episode of December, which is always a great time in the Shark and the Dog timeline because it usually means the Pats are on a playoff run. Wasn't the case last year. It is this year. What a huge difference from being 2-4 to now 8-4. We're going to break down these last six wins for the New England Patriots, talk a little Celtics, a little Bruins, maybe even some Red Sox, some big splashes in free agency last night that I'm sure Paul has plenty to say about. But first, sitting to my right is the Shark himself, Mr. Dave Nardella. Dave, how are you?
Greatest time of the year. The Pats are steamrolling right now, and it's good to be back, John.
Excellent. And out in the great state of California is Mr. Matthew Kovach. Matt, how are you?
Whose time is here again?
All right. And in the Granite State is the dog father himself, Mr. Paul Murphy. Paul, how are you?
Very good, John. Thanks for having me.
Of course. I'm your host, John Murphy. Let's get right into it. Dave, Patriots, six straight victories for this team after being 2-4. Like I said on the last episode, let the record show that when they were 2-4, I did not freak out. There's text evidence of that. I believe you were in the same boat, Dave, of not freaking out. Yeah. After a tough loss in a winnable game against the Cowboys and what they've shown us these last six games. You could spend all the time in the world if you want to poke holes through a lot of these wins, but at the end of the day, a win is a win. You're 8-4, you're atop the division, and you have a chance to take a commanding lead of the division on Monday night against the Buffalo Bills. We'll do a little preview there, but let's talk about these last six games. Go ahead.
I mean, John, the last episode I was talking about the free agent signings and just saying, you know, they needed more reps, they need more time, and we're starting to see it big time. I mean, Judon has been great all year. He's arguably one of the best defensive players in the league right now. And you have Hunter Henry, who's been huge for the red zone. We saw what Kendrick Bourne could do this past weekend. Aguilar has had some huge touchdowns. So it's great to see that our capital invested is returning on our investment. So that's huge. And this team is just so opportunistic. I mean, J.C. Jackson feels like he gets a pick every single game. We get timely turnovers on defense. The chemistry's coming together. It feels like, you know, it feels like those very successful Belichick Brady teams where they just mesh together November, December, and then, you know, chemistry rides out. They get timely plays, and the rest is history. So I'm not going rushing to conclusions here, but it all looks good here, and we did not freak out after that Dallas game either.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and things will if you're 8-5 and you lose and get embarrassed in Buffalo, that's not going to be great. It's not going to be in the worst position in the world, but they find a way to go down there and win and get to 9-4, seven wins in a row. Be truly incredible. Another player, I don't know if you mentioned him, but Jonnu Smith was someone that when we were losing games there to start the season, especially that New Orleans game where we pretty much put the entire loss on him, has looked a lot more confident. Haven't been using him a ton, but in the flashes that we've seen, he's looked pretty solid. Cove, Dave touched on chemistry of this team, and I said to you off air, what I look forward to the most is Monday morning watching the locker room clips with this team. I used to never watch them too much because, you know, it was same old, same old. There seems to be something here with Belichick and his relationship to these players, and I have absolutely loved the chemistry. Any thoughts there?
Well, for a long time, you heard that it was not a fun place to play, but at the same time, for most of the last 20 years, there's been excellent chemistry on these teams. I mean, obviously, you can point to a few seasons here and there where you thought, okay, hey, maybe these guys weren't tight. Everybody thinks about 2009. The other thing I just want to say about this team, because everybody's pointed out, you know, great points across the board, some of the stuff that's been so remarkable is the coaching. The Patriots can develop quarterbacks now. I mean, think about this. In the last 20 years, they've developed four pretty legitimate starters. I mean, maybe three and a half, you know, depending on – I know John loves Matt Castle. They developed Tom Brady. They developed Jimmy Garoppolo. They're developing Mac Jones right now. And I mean, hey, listen, all the credit goes to Josh McDaniels because this team is such an interesting mix in that you have a rookie quarterback – who is playing on a team that's built to win right away. And it's not a situation where like a Kurt Warner came in or a Prescott came in when somebody got hurt. The team was built to win right away. They spent more money this year than they had ever done in free agency before. And then they handed the keys to a rookie. It's just so different. I mean, there's no situation like it in you know, recent NFL history. So there's just so much pressure on this kid to be ready each and every week. And he's had some, you know, rookie moments here and there, you know, drop balls that should have been picked by the other team. He missed Hunter Henry wide open. Mm. And that stuff is going to happen. I mean, he's a kid. But at the same time, the way they prepared him to play is unbelievable. Just coaching is just so important in this league. You see it every week.
Absolutely. Paul, thoughts on the Pats thus far?
One point, how things have changed. A few years ago, Daniel Murphy, the New York Mets, wife was going to have a baby opening day, and people went bananas saying he has to play, it's automatic. Well, Hunter Henry faces the same thing. And, you know, his wife is pregnant, and he's going to be missing probably one of these next couple of games. You know, he wants to be there for the birth of his child. It's happened three times in Patriots history just 2 years ago, so I mean, here's hoping that everything works out, but I'm glad that things have changed, that they don't have a heart attack because some player's missing a regular season game.
I mean, it was only a couple of years ago of the, you know, court of Felger versus Horford on this very topic.
The other thing is it could be a silver lining there, too, with Jonnu Smith getting more action in the red zone, maybe taking over a bigger role. But, you know, you never know. But good point, Paul.
Mm-hmm. Anything else on the Pats?
No, just, you know, it's great that it seems like they win all the time. They're favorite all the time. I suppose if you're a gambler, you love the Patriots. So, it'll be a good game Monday night, John.
Dave, can we talk about the unsung hero of this team? Nick Folk has been
so
amazing. Until like 5 weeks ago, we were signing him to like 10-day contracts. Yeah. We were treating him like Taco Fall.
And now he's the... But in my opinion, he's the best kicker in the NFL just because he's a Northeast kicker. He's kicking in tough conditions in New England, and he's nailing 50-plus. You know, these aren't – a lot of them are like, you know, where the Pats get in tough situations where they're 40, 50s, 50, high 50-yard field goals, and he's nailing them. He missed one an extra point or something like that last week, but – still, he nailed those long ones, and that's the key down the stretch. It's huge to have that in your arsenal because that was something, you know, once Gostkowski left, I mean, once Vinatieri left, Belichick had really, it took a long time to get some trust in Gostkowski. It seems like Belichick is trusting this guy more and more as the weeks go on.
And Gostkowski, I only really remember one season where I was like, this guy cannot miss. Like, he was just – like, when he kicked that deep one against the Giants that time, that was amazing. And we didn't win the Super Bowl that year, and I think it was because he missed an extra point in Denver. And so it was basically all the way up until the end of the year he was trusted. But Nick Folk has been a breath of fresh air because it's crazy to think that they cut him did they cut him this offseason or during the training camp?
Yeah.
I think he was cut during training camp. He was cut last year because of health reasons.
That kid Nordgren in there.
Nordin.
Nordin. And by the way, on Gostkowski too, if they don't complete that comeback in the Super Bowl, they just fall short. You'll remember that Gostkowski missed extra point in that game as well.
Yeah.
So, you know, with kickers, perception is so much reality.
Field goal too? Yep. I think he ripped one off the goalpost in that same game, Cup.
Yeah, listen, Belichick loved him, obviously, and maybe it's because he was a great baseball player at Memphis and a dual athlete. I mean, it's crazy to think that Tom Brady played in New England, and outside of the year, and I forget who the kicker was, from Shane Graham was there for a hot second. There was only two kickers, really, in the entire run. That's incredible. One quarterback and two kickers. In two of the most volatile positions in football. It's crazy.
Poor Gostkowski. I mean, this season has nothing to do with him, and he's getting ripped on this episode because of how well Nick Folk's playing.
Somewhere Zoltan Mesko is selling insurance.
go ahead, Paul.
You missed Gostkowski's biggest gaffe when he kicked the ball out of bounds in the Super Bowl, and Belichick wouldn't go for the field goal. He went for it from the 29, and Brady threw it in the end zone. It was incomplete. It was just a waste of time. He was kicking on a rug. Even his being mad at him, he still would have made the field goal. That killed him.
That's a good point. Really good. A nice jab at Bill there, too. That was good, Paul. All right, so Dave, Jets, Chargers, Panthers, Falcons, Browns, Titans, out of those six legitimate wins, where do you kind of rank that run of six games? A lot of people have been trying to poke holes in that you only really faced, you know, one or two good teams there. People are saying really the only legitimate win was the Browns because everyone else had their injuries, sure, like the Titans last week.
Yeah, no, I'm going to say that Chargers one was huge. What's because the Chargers at the beginning of the season came out firing. They were scoring points. Some people said Justin Herbert was the best quarterback in the league at the beginning of the season, and he, you know, just in his second year, and we went on the road. We, you know, it was a tough game. We were losing at points. It was back and forth, and you know, that was the Adrian Phillips game where he's just been the unsung hero of that defense, just making plays all the time. And I put that win as at the top of the list in my opinion. Just it was, you know, it's one of those things when your team travels out west. And you got, you know, you got these long road trips. It's a different schedule. You go out and win that game. That was huge. That's my one, the Chargers.
Yeah, that is a good one to point to. I think the Browns, even though it was a blowout, it was just such a great team win all around. And especially we learned a lot about that team just by the way they celebrated Jacoby Myers' first NFL receiving touchdown. Paul, our favorite segment here, I'm going to give you the Pats' remaining five games. You tell me win or loss. Bills on the road.
That's a tight win.
Wow. Ooh.
Colts.
Loss.
Oh.
All right, we've got your 9-5 Patriots right now. Bills at home.
Win.
10-5. The Jacksonville Jaguars.
That's a win.
On the road to end the season in Miami.
That's a win. I know everyone's getting all worked up over because Miami's playing better, but their schedule, we could field teams to some of these teams they're beating. I mean, come on. It seems like they play Jacksonville every other week.
Well said. Cove, are we watching the 12-5 New England Patriots? Do you agree?
Man, you're at least watching the 11-6 New England Patriots. I mean, it certainly feels that way. You know, Ted Johnson said something great on the postgame show the other day. He said that this team is back to kind of controlling games. And he talked about how in his era, that first Super Bowl run, they would be up in games, maybe only by one score, you know, maybe like 10-3 or something like that. But they had such a control over the fulcrum of the football game that it was incredible. And he talked about this team having that. And that's what the way this game against the Titans felt. It was, you know, throughout most of the game, it was particularly close, but you never felt like the outcome was in doubt. And they're getting that control back in these games. Carolina felt like that. I mean, the Browns, you know, I mean, certainly that game was over, you know, in the second quarter. But there's just an incredible feel about this team. And because we're Calvinistic New Englanders and we love to compare, you know, cross currents on teams and stuff like that, it's just so hard not to think about 2001 when you see this team and you see the way that they win and you see that they win unconventional and sloppy sometimes and things like that. And it doesn't have to always look like a fantasy football score.
Well said. I'm with you, Cove. I think 11-6 is realistic. 10-7 would not be, we wouldn't be jumping for joy if they go 2-3 in these next five. If you want to be, because we're looking at this team, the way they responded to win six in a row after a tough start to the season, when a lot of people were counting them out, people were talking about, you know, do you fire Bill? It was a weird time in New England when we were 2-4, but they bounced back. Huge stretch of games. I don't expect you to win out. That would be so much to ask of a rookie quarterback and a lot of, you know, newcomers to this team, as good as our free agent signings have been. So 11-6 or more is solid. That's excellent for a rookie quarterback and what they've done with this team. And then we're going to expect something of you once you get into the playoffs. Yep. We're not going to do this, well, you know, we did as much as we could. No, you have the league, the AFC is wide open. Like, mm-hmm. Right now, the number one team, Dave, is the Baltimore Ravens, and they seem like they're in shambles. They just find a way to win games, which good for them, but they're vulnerable. I think the team I look to in this whole field is Kansas City, because if they get it together, they scare me the most, because they've been to the Super Bowl out of the last 2 years, and you were the one who stopped them 3 years ago.
Yep. Kansas City, Buffalo, those two teams really scare me. But like you said, John, you know, the AFC is pretty wide open, and, you know, it's – we've seen, you know, Cincinnati's a team that can be scary. Denver's a team if you have to go play them on the road. So this month's important because, you know, I'm not going to say they're gonna win out here, but in these Belichick teams in the past that have been successful, have gone to Super Bowls, have gone far in the playoffs, have battled a little adversity late in the season or early in the season. This team battled it early on, but you know there's a lot of growing pains with a rookie quarterback, a lot of new personnel. I wouldn't be surprised if they struggle a little bit. Again, if they go 2-3, that would be really disappointing. But if they struggle against, you know, they're playing the Bills twice, that's going to be really tough. They're playing Indy, who has played every good team in the NFL really tough. Yeah. I mean, they really should have beaten the Rams. They should have beaten the Bucs last week, or they should have, you know, at least kept it close.
They had the Derrick Henry Titans on the ropes.
Yep, and it's you got three really tough games coming this month. I mean, like Paul said, you know, Miami, everyone's going to freak out about that on the road, but that's a game you got to win. Jacksonville, it's another game you got to win. So it's going to be a tough month, but I love this team. I love the chemistry, and that's going to take you far away.
Well said. Bills, Colts, Bills, go 2-1. You put yourself in a good position. Mm-hmm. You go 1-2, you're playing catch-up at that point. All right, let's switch gears here. Cove, the Boston Celtics. They are 12-10. What do you have?
Cove?
I'm here. I'm listening to you. I'm waiting for you to give me a big intro to talk about Dennis Schroeder.
So, game's on the line. Who are you going to for an air ball from the foul line?
An overmatched air ball from the foul line, too. Absolutely, Dennis Schroeder. You know, John and I were talking earlier about having an irrational confidence guy on your team. You kind of need that spice. Well, we have two. Obviously, they're trying to rein in Marcus Smart. I don't know if he'll ever fully do it, but Dennis Schroeder proved last night that he has as much irrational confidence as anybody. But yeah, John, I listen. I'm impressed with, you know, the overall run here that you've seen over the last few weeks. You know, certainly like we talked about earlier, there were a few games. The Brooklyn game, you know, was kind of irritating particularly. But then, you know, you had a nice win against Toronto, and that win was solid. It's always good to beat Philadelphia, and it's certainly always great to beat the detestable Doc Rivers. But I'll tell you, the way that Ime Udoka, is handled just kind of everything. You're trying to get rid of the stench of last season and really the last like year and a half of this team. And you're trying to move in a new direction. And I mean, you know, for a first time head coach with a group like this, that's had a lot of success recently, that's always kind of an interesting situation. And he's handled it pretty well. And I think that you have to be kind of impressed and realize that he's trying to put this, you know, his stamp on this team. And there was a great defensive effort, particularly out there against Philadelphia last night. And this team, and I know a lot of people have talked about it, should be one of the better defensive teams in the league. So, I mean, it's all on the Jays, obviously. And I know you're happy to have Al Horford back. And I got to tell you, I am too.
Thank you for the validation there. What Udoka needs is a win streak. He needs to string together. I know it's so much to ask, and you're probably not going to get it with the West Coast trip coming up. If you find a way to get 6-7 in a row, that's where a team can really find itself. Mm-hmm. So that would be huge. Paul, tough losses against the Nets and Spurs when the Celtics were really rolling. Do you put more stock into those two tough losses or the wins against the Raptors and the 76ers here in the last two games?
Yeah, I like the look of the last couple of games. It just looked, you know, it looks better. You didn't really think they were going to beat the Nets. I don't. They just don't match up. The Nets have they have Kevin Durant. And I was just thinking, I was writing this down here. I know, you know, in order for the Celtics to survive in this world, they need to hit on free agents. Now, I know Kyrie Irving wasn't a free agent, but I just saw Kemba Walker the other night. I just can't believe that we paid him over $30 million a year. I know we struck out with Gordon Hayward, but those decisions have just destroyed us. And it really comes back to right now, it's all based on chemistry because we just don't have the talent. So if they can get the players to play together, they'll be fine. If they can't, you know, we're the Washington Wizards.
It's a great point. And when you bring up Kemba, you remember the year that we paid Kemba all that money was also the year that we refused to pay Al. And it would have been a big chunk of change to pay Al. But do you think we'd be better off if we had paid Al Horford, you know, all, if not a little bit, of what he was, if not close to what he was asking for, and then just figuring it out at the point guard position? I feel like at this point, maybe Brad Stevens is still your coach at that point. That Kemba signing was so bad. It's tough to see where he's falling. I really hope he figures it out because I do not put him on the same level as Kyrie. He was a very likable player, likable teammate, likable guy. And I am rooting for him. That stinks, but that killed us. Mm-hmm. Dave, anything?
Wait, who's a likable guy, Kemba or Kyrie? I lost you on that.
I mean, in terms of this team, it was great last night to see them beat the Sixers. I mean, it was a sloppy game. But it was still a win-win. And, you know, Al was great to watch last night. I mean, ultimate team player. I think he only took, like, a handful of shots, had five blocks, you know, rebounded the ball, shut Embiid down. And then you got to see Tatum in the first half kind of, you know, he was really playing the role of the star and, you know, being the distributor. You know, wasn't taking crazy shots, and then he hit some huge shots later on in the game. So, you know, it was good to see. And this team, you know, it's going to take some time. Like Paul said, I think this team is just going to evolve as the season goes. And you're going to need to see. There's been too much with Jaylen Brown, too many health concerns. Be great to see him just get in a roll, get back into playing again, and let's see where this team is in January. Let's see.
Definitely. Cove, are you eating an apple? There's a lot of feedback coming off of your mic.
I'm sitting right here. I'm listening to Dave talk about how we're going to put this thing together. I'm wondering what you're going to do at the trade deadline.
Oh, that's going to be crazy. Every year.
I mean, it would be interesting if Brad goes every year, Danny never gave me anything at the trade deadline. I'm going to do something big this year. It would really be something. But Gove, that game, we talked about the Schroeder shot. It was great that he was attacking the basket and getting you some important layups at the end of the fourth quarter. One sec.
I know he's going to keep it, but at least he's going to go to the hoop.
Yeah, definitely. Tough shot for him at the end. But what stuck out to me, there was, you know, equivalent to hitting a deep three to win the game was Rob Williams somehow getting his hand over there. The photo is crazy. It looks like a cartoon of him getting his hand on that ball. How much do you put on his health being a part of your success going forward?
I told you he was one of the most important players to any level of success going into last season. And, you know, you could reiterate that for this season and, you know, many more seasons to come. And that's why they decided to pay him. You know, Danny, you know, I mean, you could say that Marcus Smart is a hit. But, you know, I always thought that Danny was looking for one more kind of mid-round sleeper hit. You know, the kid out of Ohio State, you know, I thought was that for a hot second. But the point is that Robert Williams is a draft steal, a little bit like Draymond Green. And you know, I'm always comparing the Celtics to the Warriors just because of the two big players, you know, homegrown and drafted, you know, within relative succession. Is Robert Williams that third big homegrown player? And again, nothing away from Marcus Smart, but Robert Williams is a potential all-star in the league. He can score, he's got soft hands, and his game just appears to have, you know, just be on a total upswing every year that he's been in the league, you know, once he figured out how to wake up and make it to practice. So that was just remarkable last night, though. But you see him out there and you think, my God, you know, this kid has so much potential. And developing him is going to be so key, not only to the rest of this season, but like I said, so many future seasons. He is such an important player, and he's a big hit. And, you know, as far as Ainge and the free agent signings, I'm sure he feels the same way. Again, you know, you had a chance to trade for Kyrie Irving, who had just come off making a game-winning shot in the NBA Finals, was in his early to mid-20s, and looked like just about the best guard in the game besides Steph Curry, and you got to trade him for what was essentially spare parts. I mean, you have to do that trade all the time and hope that you could figure it out, that you're going to catch sanity in a bottle. And then nobody could have, you know, Gordon Hayward was an all-star in the West. That was when, you know, the late Kobe Bryant was still with us and a thriving player. So, you know, your Gordon Hayward got hurt with a career-changing injury. Kyrie Irving exploded, and you know the rest. So, I mean, it's hard to say that, you know, outside of Kemba, that Danny was like some sort of a wreck recently and he buried the team. Don't forget, you'd be nowhere
yeah,
if you did not trade Markelle Fultz for Jason Tatum. Forget about this. We'd be talking about the lottery if he did not make that trade. So.
Yeah, it's a good point. I think this Kemba for Al trade is going to be, you know, what we would have wanted out of the Kyrie trade for sure. Yeah. Matt, a quick question. Were you the Ohio State player? Were you talking about Jared Sullinger, Evan Turner, or Greg Oden?
I was talking about Jared Sullinger, not the great Evan Turner.
Oh, gotcha. Yeah, I just wanted to double check there.
Not Indiana Pacers legend Evan Turner.
Paul, anything else on the C's here?
No, I think you've covered that quite well, John.
Excellent. Dave, let's go to the most boring team in town, the Boston Bruins. Go ahead.
Most boring team? Are you kidding me? So much has gone on.
They are the most boring team. If you were going to rank all, sure, including the Revolution, you rank all five, they're fifth.
Sure. I mean, it's November. It's early December in the NHL season in this team. You know, it's. I'm not going to get into that argument, but a lot has happened this week. I mean, they're putting a guy that they've invested a lot of time into, Jake DeBrus, put him on the trade block. Tuukka Rask potentially coming back. Yeah. Bruce Cassidy out with COVID. A lot has happened this week with the Bruins, and not to mention they lost in prime time on Friday against the Rangers, and that was a game they were dominating up until the third period, and they lost steam. So it's been quite a lot going on with the Bruins. And Brad Marchand got suspended again for slew-footing. So that's five things right there. But this team, again, it's going to take time. You never know. It's the whole David Krejci replacement has with Charlie Coyle, I think, is unfair to him because Charlie Coyle's been great this year. But that's a huge, huge hole in the lineup because Krejci did so much for you last year. In the last, you know, 10 plus years, he was so good for the Bruins. But other than that, I think, you know, this team, it's going to take time. You got a lot of new players. Like I said in the last episode, you got a lot of new players. It's going to take time for this team to come together. You never know. Maybe you get Tuukka Rask back in January, February. That boosts your goaltending a little bit. But this team is still finding its way a little bit.
Well said. Taylor Hall has been very disappointing. The only thing here is that he likes his environment. So if he's going to turn it around, I feel like he's better off doing it here than he would be in Buffalo, hating where he is. So I'm holding out hope for Taylor Hall, but he's been disappointing to start. Sure. What I will say on Brad Marchand, it stinks that he's, you know, does that, puts the team in that position, gets suspended. That's your track record. You're probably going to get suspended when you slew-foot a guy like that. In that game, though, I watched every move he was making. He was making, after the slew foot, he was making Ekman Larson's life a living hell. He was making guys on that team who were bigger than him their life a living hell. He was making people look foolish. He looked like an NBA player the way he was juking guys and deking players and just making, you know, faking them out. That pass for the final goal. Even when he set up Bergeron for the empty net goal and got called back. It was unbelievable. That was the Brad Marchand show in every which way. So he's going to be so important.
Top five player in the NHL.
Yep.
I
agree. He is going to be so important for this team going forward. Cove, anything there?
We've seen this before, and it's going to be okay. This team is the 2009-2010 Bruins. Would anybody like to guess what the team's record was that season?
No, go ahead.
39-30. They were one win from the Stanley Cup final. They were 39-30. They were 18-17 at the Garden that year. I think they lost something like 13 or 14 games in overtime. If look at who was on that team: Milan Lucic, David Krejci, Patrice Bergeron, Tuukka Rask, Zdeno Chara. That team was, you know, basically an arc. You're kind of coming off the back end of like the Joe Thornton, Samsonov, 2003, 2004, 2005 era. You're now into the Chara era, and that you're, you know, basically working with a completely fresh roster with some whole. I mean, again, you don't need me to go through the history of the team, but this team is very similar to that, in that this is a very talented group on the ice. There's a ton of talent out there. When one of your lines is referred to as the perfection line, you know you have a pretty good team. When talented guys like Jake DeBrusk, you know, can't really find enough ice time, you know you have a talented team. So, again, I think that this team, it's going to be a work in progress the whole year. That New York game was, you know, totally, you know, everything, it kind of like encapsulized, you know, the frustrating parts of the season. You're dominating the game, like Dave said, and then in the end, you just completely fall apart. It's because you do have young goaltender. I'm not sure how much I love bringing Rask back. It's almost like you got to rip the Band-Aid off once and for all and start developing these kids and take some lumps. And unlike the Red Sox, I don't think that they not need to make the playoffs. That was wrong, and I was wrong on that. You guys called me on it.
Can I call a quick timeout? You also said the same thing about Al Horford, which was.
Yeah, I mean, God, I'm so wrong too. You know, it, man, it's terrible. I thought Mitt Romney was going to be a good governor too. 0-3. So the point is that it's going to take some time on this team. It's a complete remake, and again, you are slowly. Patrice Bergeron is in his last, or maybe second to last, high-end or relatively high-end season, and that's okay to say that. He's had a wonderful career, but he is nearing the end of the line of playing at that kind of a level. Marchand is still really good. He was also younger than those guys before. He's, you know, super young when he hit the NHL. But, you know, you're really handing the keys to the car to a brand-new generation of guys, and it's going to take some time to let it all shake out. But this is a dangerous team going down the stretch. Keep your head above water. Make the playoffs, and nobody's going to want to play these guys, and, you know, they can get hot. And, you know, Swayman can get hot, too.
True, yeah.
Well said. Paul, let me give you a scenario. You're the Boston Bruins. You go into this season, and you go, you know what? We're going to pay Vladar a little bit. We're going to pay Swayman a little bit, and then we're going to sit them down and say, hey, you two, whichever one of you is playing best gets to stay. The one who's playing not as well has to go to Providence, and when Rask comes back, he has his job back. You're going to play behind him unless you're playing better, and then you get to play in the postseason. How do you feel about that goalie scenario rather than giving Ullmark all that money?
I tell Rask to find a home somewhere else. I really would. You just can't keep going back to that well. The well's dry. It's over. As Matt said, pull the Band-Aid off. John, let me give you a couple of scenarios, quick ones here. Brad Marchand, 10-game suspension. I can't take it anymore. He's bad for the league.
But
the biggest problem with the Bruins is the general manager. They had a choice of Jeff Gorton or Don Sweeney. They made the wrong choice. He was ill-prepared when he couldn't get Noah Hannaford in that draft, and he had those three draft picks. He had no idea what to do, so he went 0-3. And I heard on the radio today that Malcolm Subban is now with Buffalo. Someone picked him as the first-round pick of the Bruins. I don't know who that was, but he should have his head examined, and he should not be a director of scouting, that's for sure.
That was a lot to take in.
Dave. Well, I don't think you –
I think everybody loved Don Sweeney as a player, you know, certainly a local guy from Harvard, but this has been bad. And I think it's been so bad when you look at, they've kind of burned through some players here. I mean, Dan Heinen's a pretty good player. They thought that he was, you know, obviously going to be the next guy. Anders Bjork, again, they thought he was going to be the next guy. And if they didn't just overwhelmingly hit on McAvoy and Pasternak, it would really pull back the, you know, kind of shine a black light on the fact that they've really whiffed on some guys. It's kind of been like a Patriots whiffing type run.
I only really look at Barzal as someone of like, shit, we should have had that guy.
The NHL, too, in the first round, it's tough. I mean, it's less than 10% of the guys become like super all-stars. And the fact that you have McAvoy and Pasternak as guys that, you know, are homegrown type players is a pretty solid thing. I'm not going to put, obviously, those three picks in a row, really tough for Sweeney.
Still mid-ish round, though.
Yeah, and you know what? I'm not going to put all this on him. I still think we have a good system coming up. We still have good young talent. We have probably one of the better goalie prospects in the league in Swayman, and he's getting some serious time here. I do want to protect Brad Marchand here because, you know, he hasn't been as dirty of a player as he was a few years ago. He's really turned around. He's become a leader on this team. Bergeron, it came from Bergeron, who is Mr. Perfect himself, said, you know, it wasn't malicious at all. It's just the way he plays and the way that Brad Marchand has evolved over the years. I'm not gonna really say that Brad Marchand is a perfect person, but he's
egregious evolved. Brad Marchand stuff. Yes. It wasn't.
But to echo John's point, I mean, that game, he literally, it was the first time since like watching a McDavid game earlier this year where I was like, this guy is literally dominant than every single player on the ice. And it was unbelievable to watch. It was a piece of art.
He looked like Kyrie when Kyrie's playing well, of like making guys look foolish when you have the possession. Dave, I noticed that Paul and Cove disagreed with me. My goalie situation. Would I proposed, rather than bringing Ullmark in, would you have done what I did of little money to Swayman and Vladar, and then the worst one goes down to Providence?
No, because, I mean, when you look at the future...
Right, that's the show. Thanks for coming.
When you look at the future, I mean, it's like Vladar, he's a nice backup in the NHL. He's not going to be anything special.
Three shutouts.
And then Swayman, you're just going to throw him into the fire and just, you know... and you know, that could go really downhill fast. You get Ullmark in here, he can take some of the brunt. He got him on a contract. And say you get Tuukka Rask this year, he's only going to play for one, maybe 2 years more. So it was the right move there, I think. You know, Vladar, great player, a little clunky as a goaltender in terms of his style, and he's doing well in Calgary, and I wish him the best. The players love him, so... But I don't think they should have done that. That would have been too much pressure on both those guys.
Good stuff. Good Bruins talk. Let's wrap things up with the Red Sox here. We'll do this relatively quickly. We're not going to do a history lesson to the Boston Red Sox or their free agency in previous years. I'm going to put the Jackie Bradley trade in what I think it is of, I think Hein Bloom thinks he can catch lightning in a bottle here and get the ALCS Jackie Bradley out of this. What I would love to be the case, Dave, is that they were truly vindictive of Hunter, you cost us a trip to the World Series, get out. If they came out and did a press conference right now and said that, I think they would get a lot of support because Hunter Renfro had an amazing season, had a, you know, not a great start to the season and finished up with 31 home runs and over 100 RBIs for $8 million, that is unbelievable value, something that you think Hein Bloom would absolutely love. And at the end of the day, he ships him out for a guy who's hitting 165 in Milwaukee for $12 million, for $4 million more. Yes, you get two prospects in here, but you're in a different position than you were the previous year, so we don't need to value prospects as highly. So such a weird situation. I need them to come out and say it was all vindictive of, you know, it was because he screwed us. Yeah. Because the only thing he did for us in the postseason was let a ball hit him in the kneecap and go in for a ground rule double, which saved the Rays series. Other than that, he friggin' screwed us. Dave, anything there?
It's a lot to unbottle, but you know, I mean, it's a Kyle Bloom is really taking things slow here. He's not going out. He's not Dombrowski going out and getting 20, $30 million guys, paying guys left and right. It's been interesting to see. And the MLB right now is in the work stoppage, which is something in itself. So I don't know. I mean, the amount of money that's going around in free agency right now is nuts. $30-40 million to shortstops, and it's, you know, it's not even the top guys. I mean, there's some of the top guys, but not like guys I would pay $40 million for.
Seager.
Yeah, it's crazy right now, and it's one of those things where Kyle Bloom is keeping a lot of the team together, and then he's going out and signing wily veterans. Rich Hill, James Paxton, Michael Wacha. So it's interesting so far, and I really intrigued by Kimbloom's brain, just because of how he grew Tampa Bay and how this Red Sox team came together this year. Obviously not his masterpiece at all, but it's interesting to see how this will play out this year. So just kind of wait and see. Just like I've been with the Red Sox my entire life.
Yeah, what's waiting at the end of the tunnel for me is if Bloom signs Kyle Schwarber to a couple-year deal, all is forgiven. If this is the end of the road for everything he's done in free agency,
yeah,
I'm going to have a lot of questions. But if this isn't all of it, I'm holding out hope. I know Paul's a little bit more pessimistic. We'll hand it off to Cove here. Cove, go ahead.
I don't think that they're done in free agency, but at the same time, I don't think that they're just back not to spending bad money. And John Henry is, you know, certainly making room for other things in his portfolio and said, hey, listen, you know, I've spent on the Red Sox for years and I've spent on Fenway for years, and I'm going to start redirecting a little bit of my money. And I see kind of the way the tide has turned in Major League Baseball, and in that you don't necessarily need to spend a ton of money to win. I mean, again, people do complain, and I understand you can't always look at it in a vacuum, but the New York Yankees have won 2 World Series since the year 2000. I mean, think about that.
It's crazy.
The last time they won the World Series, Barack Obama was not 1 year into being an elected president. He hadn't been in the Oval Office 1 year the last time they won the World Series. The year before that was the year 2000. I mean, it was the Subway Series. So the Yankees spend more than anybody. Everybody knows that if there's a big guy out there, the next Garrett Cole or somebody like that, Giancarlo Stanton, the Yankees are going to be in on him. Everybody always thinks, oh, he's going to the Yankees. They've won 2 World Series in 21 years.
Was Clinton still president, Cove?
In 2000, Bush was president.
In October?
In October of 2000?
Paul, we got to go to you.
Right. What a great call, John. What a wonderful call.
Very good, so, John.
Thank you. I mean, the Red Sox had 2 Bush World Series.
John, that was phenomenal. I know, absolutely phenomenal. Bill Clinton was the sitting president. So the last 2 presidents when the Yankees won the World Series were Barack Obama and William Jefferson Clinton. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. And I mean, again, not to overstate this, Obama was not even 1 year into his first term, And again, these guys are in on everybody. So, I mean, I think you're doing pretty well if you're the Red Sox and you've literally won 4 titles since 2004. And
with,
I know that Paul
with three
not,
different
I,
presidents, Cove, the
oh
Red Sox have won
and,
with
and,
three
and,
different
yeah,
presidents.
Yeah, 3 different presidents, 3 different managers. And again, listen, I don't care who you're going to see at Fenway Park, whether it's Luke Bryan, Def Leppard, or Fish, you could thank John Henry every time he walked through the turnstile because that thing was toast. And again, I understand why people do not like John Henry. I totally get that. I can't even look at the globe anymore. But I totally get some of the reason people don't like this guy. But if he is not the owner of the Red Sox, if he does not buy the team later that year, a year later in 2001, I mean, life is a lot different in Boston. I'm telling you, the way you look at the Reds, it's just, you cannot understate what he did and how important everything he did was in those first 4 or 5 years there too. Getting Theo there, hiring Janet Marie Smith. I mean, they hired Janet Marie Smith for crying out loud. And now every team hires Janet Marie Smith. The Dodgers did.
Well said, Paul, your rebuttal.
John. I wrote down these in history. I wrote down a few trades that obviously didn't work out. Go back to right around 1970, Montreal Canadiens got Guy Lafleur. They used to get the first French Canadian. They had that, and they changed the rules. So California Golden Seals had the pick. So they got Guy Lafleur from California, and they sent them Ernie Hickey. He scored 16 goals. In 1980, Magic Johnson went to the Lakers for Don Ford of the Cleveland Cavaliers. And we go back to 1920 when Harry Frazee of the Red Sox sold Babe Ruth to the Yankees so he could keep his Broadway play, No, No, Nanette, in play. Okay? But today, when I woke up, that was
this,
the worst.
There's one more, Paul. Kendrick Perkins for Jeff Green. Throw that in there, too.
John, there's plenty of bad ones. You could go on all day. But... but today, when I woke up and I heard that this morning, I said, you can't be serious. You just absolutely can't be serious. Then I have to listen all day to how bad Jackie Bradley is as a hitter. You know, the stats go back to 1920. He's the worst hitting outfielder ever, in all time, ever. Okay? I know he makes five great catches a year, but Kiki Hernandez would probably make three of those five. So that's all he does for the whole year. He batted 163. It's John. It's just,
bad example. Kiki Hernandez dropped the ball and you lost game six.
I know he did. I realize everybody makes errors, but this guy never, ever gets a hit.
Yeah.
Ever. Okay. So now this Heim Bloom wants us to wait for his season to, you know, play out and then we can judge him. Wrong. I've been listening for 5 years to Matt Bash Dombrowski. That guy is so far superior to Heim Bloom, it's not even funny. The guy has won at three different places. Heim Bloom, in my opinion, is a worse general manager than Don Zimmer was as a manager. And that's almost impossible. John, today was the lowest day in Red Sox history.
What?
The lowest. John, when I get up this morning, I sent a note to Dan Shaughnessy, who I've spoken to a few times, and he sent me back something and it said, I said, you're the only one that can save us, Dan. It's it. I said, everyone's turned into Danny from Quincy. You're the only one that can save us. And he said it was an absolute insult to the fans. And let's leave it at that.
Mike,
so,
drop.
Matt, take your Heim Bloom and all your bashing of Dombrowski and stop.
Mike,
because this guy is a disgrace, and no one's going to be going to that ballpark as long as he's in charge. Nobody.
Wow.
I think we got to wrap things up there. That was we're not going to get much better than that for a concluding thought. That blows my bashing of the Bruins way out of the water.
I always thought that failed Jackie Robinson tryout was the worst moment in Red Sox history, but man,
No, a different Jackie story, Cove. You were way off there. All right, gentlemen, this was.
I don't even know if he's necessarily going to be starting, by the way. I think that there's like some, you know, some idea that, you know, he's going to be in the starting outfield mix. Again, I don't know, but I could see him as more of a platoon player.
Well, $12 million well spent nonetheless. Paul, really good stuff. Way to bring it on the first episode of the holiday season. Usually one of our finer episodes. Dave, any concluding thoughts?
No, I'm very excited for the Pats coming up here, and you know, we got to really enjoy that because then we get into the dog days of basketball and hockey in February and March. So let's enjoy.
Excellent, Dave Cove, Dan Shaughnessy's pen pal. Excellent episode. We will talk to you guys in 2 weeks. We will be out of commission next week. Quick business trip, and then we will be back to break down a couple of these. Couple of these Pats games. Gentlemen, thanks for coming on.
Brian Kelly then, correct, John?
Thank you, John.
Thanks, Paul. Cove, I'll give you 10 seconds on Brian Kelly.
No. I'll save it for 2 weeks when the boys get back from Barbados.
All right, sounds good. See you, guys.